episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guest, Joel Crosby, former member of Potter's House. Joel, it's good to have you on and to share your story. We had your father, Dennis, on the podcast, and there are so many things for me to learn about Potter's House. I knew some of them, but not nearly to the extent that I'm learning from both you and your father. And interestingly, you're a researcher too, which we'll get into that, but your research has crossed paths with my research through Chuck Smith. And there's this weird epicenter that that really is unexplored. I think we need to explore it more. There, within the Pentecostal movement, there are these cities of epicenter that big explosions that lead to other groups, some of them destructive, some of them not, happen. One of them being Los Angeles, obviously, because of the Azusa Street Revival. But across the nation and, well, even the world, there are other epicenters where this happens. And there's a reason for it, which I'll get into in a bit. But that one of the epicenters that I came across by sheer accident was Prescott, Arizona. In the Branham cult, when I was researching it, there's a very, very destructive group in Prescott, Arizona, that was led by two of William Branham's most important key figures of the Branham movement. They were basically his scribes and had control of all of the recordings and distribution of recordings, etc. Well, they created a very, very destructive compound where there were just horrific things happening. I can't even say, or the social media and the other platforms will block me. But we did have a guest who came out of that destructive sect and talked about the torture, all of the other things. Deborah Thibodeau, if you want to go back and listen to it through the podcast series. But from Prescott, Arizona, there were other connections, one of them being the Foursquare Church. So I was digging into that, and that was long before I really understood the trail between Branhamism through Chuck Smith into John Wimber, etc., into the New Apostolic Reformation. I did not connect the dots closely enough to realize that Chuck Smith was big in Prescott, Arizona. There were ties, which I've talked about this briefly in one of the other podcasts, to Arizona, the state of Arizona. I think it was his sister-in-law, a relative of his was a district head. And so she was able to help launch Chuck Smith's career. And I don't think Chuck Smith would have became who he was without really all of that background. He was well-recognized. Well, in Prescott, Arizona, there were things happening. And I'll get into that later because I'm still digging into that part. But needless to say, what happened did lead to a splinter group. That splinter group did evolve into your story. So maybe if you could begin, just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, and we'll get into the deeper, maybe later in the podcast. But this, the focus of this, obviously, is your story. So welcome aboard.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on your podcast. My name is Joel Crosby. I'm a former member of the Potter's House. Actually, I grew up in the Door in the Netherlands, which is the Door is part of the Potter's House. It's one of several names that they use. And I was born and raised into it, and I left about 7 years ago at the age of 25. I've had a lot of very bad experiences in the Potter's House. After I left the Potter's House, I actually have a lot more that I have experienced. And it partly has to do because of how much I speak out against the Potter's House and everything that I have gone through. I can start at the beginning if that's all right.
Absolutely.
My dad also did an interview with you. He was he became a member of the Potter's House when he was in the U.S. Still, he was in the army, and he was on his way to a church called I think it was Open Bible or Assemblies of God, one of both. And on the way there, his car broke down. So he could no longer go to that church with his car, and he was looking for a new church that he could reach with the public transportation, and that was Victory Chapel. Victory Chapel was part of what we called the Fellowship. The Fellowship is the Potter's House, the Door, Lighthouse, all kinds of churches belong to that. And he became a member there, and as he moved around, as the army moved him around, he kind of visited several fellowship churches. And then he got sent to the Netherlands by the army, and he met my mom here in the first fellowship church that we had in Europe. And they got married shortly after. He got sent back to the States. Then my two sisters were born there. And then he got sent a second time to Europe, this time to Germany, where I was born. We moved to Belgium. And in Belgium, his 20 years in the army came to a stop. And the army actually offered him a job. He could stay there and work as a civilian and be paid about 10,000 guilders per month. And he turned that down and said no, because he wanted his children to experience a ongoing revival as he had experienced in the States. And with that, he meant he wanted us to become members of the fellowship again. So we moved back to the Netherlands when I was 3 years old. And that's where we became part of the fellowship again.
I'm so curious to learn the perspective of a child growing up in the Potter's House. What was your childhood like in the movement?
My childhood wasn't really that different. I mean, there's not really much that I can say about my childhood in the fellowship. I just did everything that we had. We had Sunday school. We had children's choir and children's church. And those were the things that I was going to. And then when I became a teenager and I started going to high school, I already noticed that a lot of the testimonies that older children had, they all had a common theme. And that common theme was that they wanted to go to high school and they wanted to fit in. And when they wanted to fit in, they started smoking or drinking, and that was considered a sin. So they backslid. And I was really afraid of losing my salvation. So what I did is I thought, okay, when I go to high school, all I have to do is not fit in, and then I will keep my salvation. So as a consequence of that, I got bullied in high school a lot. I've actually gone to about 8 different schools. And with that, I mean primary school, high school, and college. And most of them because I got bullied so much. And when I was a teenager, there were more expectations from me, from the pastor, from the church on me as well, because now I was going to enter that discipleship process. I was a teenager. That meant I had to go to youth camp, the boot camps that they have, where they basically do military types of trainings with children. They have drill sergeants, and they wake us up in the morning. Like, we have to do real physical exercise trainings, which I didn't like, because my dad always told me, do not go to in the army. he had very bad experiences there. So
you mentioned bullying in so many different schools. I've talked about that to some extent, but I've never really mentioned the bullying. I was same exact thing. We went to so many different schools because we were moving to different locations, different cities that had different churches in the Branham organization. And like you, I grew up different than everybody else. And the sad truth of the matter is, there are children who can't really handle the different. And that's why there are bullies. They see somebody who's different, they begin picking on them. Why are you different than me? And psychologically, it's just a personality disorder they have. Well, they start picking on the child who's different. Well, if you're in a cult, you are the one who's different. You are the target for many bullies, and I was one of those targets. Fortunately, and sadly too, because I look back, this was not a good memory, but I grew physically faster than everybody else. So I was a little bit bigger until I got into maybe high school. I was not as big as some of the others, but I was larger, and I did have a bully picking on me, and he pushed the line so far that I finally just exploded and let him have it. And I remember people having to pull me off of him as I was swinging fists. And that was the last time, at least in that school, that happened. So I sympathize with everything that you have said, and the Army connection, you know, or the military connection. It's so weird because it's really like you're going through a military program when you join into these cults as a child. They are training you. They're trying to break you down. They're trying to remove your willingness to be your own person. There are so many similarities. Now, on the military side, they're doing it for a good cause in some cases. But in the cult side, they're doing it just solely so they can break you down and have their way with your mind. So there are so many similarities, and none of them are good.
Yeah, I went to boot camp. I was expected to go to the outreach that we did every time, which I did, because when you did those things, you fit in. And I was trying to fit in with the other kids in the church. But I also had pretty bad stage fright. And one of the things that we did was we did a drama team and the choirs that we had, the youth choir. And I really hated doing that, but I did those things because I was trying to fit in. Now, when I was being bullied in school, I was I got really depressed. And I got so depressed that I actually didn't want to live anymore. And in church, I learned that I had to go to my pastor if I had any problems for counseling. The problem was that our pastor did not have any formal training whatsoever. All he did was a type of school for farmers. So he was better at keeping livestock than caring for people. And he was when I went to him for counseling, I told him I was really depressed, and at the same time, there was a lot of things going on with the health, with my dad's health, because he had some medical complications from several sicknesses that he had, and the doctors didn't really know what to do with him, and because of that, he went on some experimental interferon treatments. And that really messed with his head in a way that we had difficulty at home as well. So I told my pastor I was depressed. I told him about my dad and everything that was going on at home as well. And then he just told me, well, if you're depressed, just smile, because if you smile, your brain will make some chemicals that will make you happy. And about your dad's a rebel. You need to find another father figure in the church. And yeah, when he said that, I mean, I knew that my dad was considered a rebel, because he was smarter than most people in the church. He knew Greek, he knew Hebrew, he knew what the Bible said, and he knew that what they were preaching was not that. What he did is we had this Sunday morning Bible study, and in the Bible study, you were allowed to ask questions during the study. And he did ask questions, but he asked questions that were too difficult for the pastors. And they didn't like that. So one time he was actually saying something that he was agreeing with the pastor, and the pastor didn't understand what he was saying and tried to silence him while he was trying to back what he was saying. So, I knew that people considered him a rebel for speaking out against the pastor publicly like that. But now I heard it from the pastor himself. And what that did was that I did what the pastor told me. I looked at another father figure, basically, in the church, another example. the pastor actually, I think, meant himself when he said that, but I didn't realize it back then, and I did not choose him as that replacement father figure, because I knew that I never wanted to be anything like him, but I didn't want to be good in his eyes, basically. I did a lot for the approval of the pastor.
Earlier, when I said the cults will break you down, there's so many different ways that they do that, but one of the ways that they do it is they break down the family unit, and what you've just described is exactly that. They actually put more emphasis on the group than they do your family unit, your mother, your father, your sisters, your brothers. You are indebted to the group because they're giving you the salvation, and the central figure, if you're directly tied to the central figure, or all the way down the chain of command to your local pastors, they feel like they have this power over you because they're the one who is giving you this salvation in a bucket. You know, it's so weird because they basically replace the role of the Holy Spirit in these groups, and people submit to them thinking it is their only chance of survival. Survival meaning eternal survival, you know. So when you're in this one of these types of groups and they're breaking the families apart like this, what they're doing, very much like the military, as I mentioned, they're trying to break your personal will so that you can have your will focused on the group. And that way your sights are set on the group, not anything in this life. And that's why some destructive groups spin so far out of control that they even take their own lives, because their lives are no longer important. That's the thing to understand. While you're in one of these groups, your life is not important. And the leadership, because of they're going through the same groupthink, the same cult mindset that you are, they don't really care about your life because they also are going through the same things that you're going through. So they, as leaders, don't care about your life. You, as a rank and file member, you also don't care about your life. And that's very dangerous when you take a step back and you think about everything that's going on. How did that affect your relationship with your father?
What happened is I started to resent my father a lot. So much so that it eventually escalated into me going away from home for 2 months and living with one of my friends because of a fight that I had with my father that, looking back, my dad didn't do anything wrong. It was just me. I came back from a church event and it was messing with my head.
It's just so sad. If you listen to any of the stories that I have on Fridays with people who have escaped these groups, they seem to all be saying the same things. And the family unit being destroyed, that's like one of the most important parts or most important jobs of a pastor, is to help maintain the families that are in the congregation. It's literally the shepherd flocking, you know, working with the sheep in his flock. And yet what they're trying to do is become both the shepherd and the wolf. And it's so wrong whenever you think about it. One of the things that happens in these groups, whenever they're in that level of destructive nature, they turn into what people call a high control group. People are trying to submit their will to the group, and they try to give them activities, etc. Just try to basically keep their mind so busy that they can't think of the fact that their families are being destroyed. Is that something that happened in your group?
I did a lot to try to fit in with the other kids in church. And as I grew older, even more was expected of me.
Yeah, I assume that would be the case. That literally all of these groups, to some level, have exactly that. And again, it goes back to the fact that they want your focus to be in the group, not on your family. And it destroys families. Let's go back and let's talk a bit about your father and especially the mental health aspect. I did have the conversation with him. I want to hear also your perspective. As I've mentioned several times, in these groups, they really frown upon mental health, seeking help for mental health issues. And in fact, in some groups, they demonize it. If you go to one of these counselors or therapists or anything to do with your brain health, they will say that those people are working for the devil, or the medication itself is the devil. I went to multiple pastors as I was fighting through anxiety, severe, crippling anxiety that was leading to depression. And I had one minister tell me that, John, don't go to those mental health doctors. I think he was saying therapists. Don't go to those therapists because they will recommend that you get medication. And I've watched time and time again, the moment that somebody in my church gets this medication for their brain health, they leave the cult. And he obviously didn't use the word cult, but it's so frowned upon because I think the groups have learned that if people can get their mental faculties in order, they're going to suddenly wake up and critically think. And so they do not want the critical thought in the group. So what's that like from your perspective? Do you see the same thing in your group as I saw in mine?
So the same story was mentioned several times in our church as well. Well, it's not really several times. It's even in their own books. I have a stack here of books that some of which I have read, some of which I'm still reading. These are all books that are written by fellowship pastors. And what you're saying about therapy and do not go to therapy, there's even quotes in these books where they say that if you go to a psychiatrist, then they will charge you $150 an hour just to sit there and listen to you complain, and then you go back the same or even worse than you came in. So they were really, really against going to therapy, and they were actively telling people not to go. And actually, this is later though, but after I left and I did go into therapy and I told them about I was a member of the Door, then they already said, oh, okay. And I asked them, so you have heard of it and you have had clients from there. And then they said, well, I'm not supposed to talk about it, but I'm glad that you left. That's what they told me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's funny that you said that.
Yeah, I've had similar conversations, and it's kind of funny how they dodge that question. But in the end, it's so sad because the people who really, really need the help, and that help may be medication, it may not, they need it so desperately, it causes them to suffer beyond what other people in the church are even suffering. I can speak from experience. This is one of the most devastating things to have to go through. It robs you of your life, your happiness. Sometimes, for some people, it robs them of their families. It is awful. And to think that the shepherd of a flock would do this, it tells me that it's not a shepherd at all. Yeah, I feel really, really bad for your father.
So my dad's mental health, he was so busy with everything that he was going through. He was sleeping, I thought, 16 hours a day or maybe even more. Because of the medication, the pain and everything, and every time he was sleeping, then the pain, he didn't feel it actively, I guess. But eventually there was a time that he was diagnosed with cancer as well, intestine cancer. And then I gave him a month to live. I thought he's going to die now, because everything that he was going through, a lot of pain, and that's one of the worst sounds that you can hear someone make, is when they go through that much pain. And my entire childhood, basically my youth, I was expecting my dad to die at any moment. And at the same time, I was resenting him, and I was afraid of when he did die that I would be too close to him to feel that emotional pain. So I was also trying not to be too close, I guess. And my pastor telling me that he was a rebel and I should look for another father figure.
Wow.
And it took years away from a relationship that I might have had with my dad that I cannot take back.
It's just so wrong. You know, like I said, it breaks the family units apart, and people who are in the family units don't even realize that they're being broken apart. That's really the crux of this. And yet at the same time, there are people in leadership who are aware of exactly what they're doing, and they see it as a righteous thing. They don't see it as they're being destructive or they have ill intent. So for a godly purpose, they're breaking family units apart. But there are some who realize what they're doing is wrong, and they use it as a weapon. They know that the family has put more importance on the cult than they have the family unit, and they realize that if a person leaves the group, their families will likely cut them off. And over time, this has just evolved into this thing where it becomes a weapon by the ministers. If you don't behave, if you don't adhere to our cult's rules, I'm going to cut you off from the group, and your family will never, ever talk to you again, or they will emotionally block you. They don't come out and say the consequences. They don't come out and tell you your family won't love you, but that's essentially what happens. They know that that's what's going to happen. Families will cut them off, and it is just so wrong to think that a minister would do this, a minister of the gospel, of all things, that it's a different gospel. It truly is, and it is wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And what you just described, that's something that I experienced really rough when it actually came that far, because I never thought I would actually leave the cult. I always thought, like, this is my home, this is my family, I'm never going to leave. And I tried actively. I mean, I told you about my childhood. I was afraid of losing my salvation, and losing my salvation was the same thing as leaving the church. Because I, in the church, I had a couple of friends who came in later than I did. They weren't really church kids. They stayed for a couple of years and then they left. And my friendship with them stopped as well. And I was too young, and this was before the social media. So I didn't know where they were. I didn't have any way to keep in contact with them. They left. We didn't have any contact anymore. We were no longer friends. But when I did come to a realization that the church was not perfect was somewhere in 2015. This was when a woman from church, we were talking, and I don't know why, but I asked her a question. Have you ever killed an animal? Weird question to ask, but okay, I was trying to make conversation, I guess, in my own weird way. And she didn't like the question at all, and she made that really clear. She told me to switch the subject, and I was sorry that I even ever asked her. Then 1 year later, 2016, my dad came to church one day, and he saw another pastor from another church, from another city there, who was usually translating, and he was there to translate again in the morning for the son of the founder, Greg Mitchell, who is now the new head of the entire fellowship. And that was so unexpected for him, because he had some very, very bad experiences with that pastor. So he said some words against him. He screamed some words at him, nothing that wasn't true. And that was the last day that he was ever in the church. So he left. And that was very difficult, because now my dad was already a rebel, and I did everything I could to show the church that I was nothing like him, even though I'm a lot like him. But that was very difficult, because if you're in the church, you have and your parents are in the church, and you're a church kid, and your parents are considered pillars, which means they helped build up the church by their time and their money. Then when your parents leave, like my dad left and my mom followed a couple months later, then you lose some kind of status in the church. And that same thing happened with me, because now my parents were gone, and people started looking at me like, oh, is Joel going to leave, or are my sisters going to leave? So I was trying even harder to prove that I was nothing like my dad.
They break the family units apart, but not just the mother, father, sister, brother. They also break the distant relatives apart, especially those who've left, those who were never in the group. I actually said in a sermon where a minister from behind the pulpit said, I went to a family reunion, and oh boy, and he goes off into his laughter about ridiculing those who aren't in the group. And he says something to this effect. Some of the family members asked me, why don't I ever come see them? Why don't you ever have anything to do with us? And I just told them flat out to their face, it's because you left the message. And he was referring to Branhamism. He said, because you're not in Branhamism, I won't come see you. And he said, flat out to their faces, apparently, at least that's what he said from behind the pulpit, if you would come back into the message, I would spend some time with you. And it's just so wrong to think a minister who's trying to lead the flock as a shepherd would think it's okay and holy and righteous to split a family apart. In fact, it just angers me. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. So we've talked about how a destructive group impacts the childhood, and especially how the family unit, the mother, father, sister, brother, is kind of broken apart. The group is the emphasis, the family is not as important, and especially the extended family is broken apart. Now let's fast forward a bit to the teenage years, to the years whenever you're trying to establish your own family, you're trying to build your own family unit. The group gets involved with this in ways that I think a lot of people don't really think through. Not just that they're telling you who or who not you can marry, although some groups do, but they get into your head in ways that it impacts the rest of your life. So let's talk through this a bit. What was it like for you during this point of time in your life?
A lot of things happen in the span of three years or something, because in 2017 I met my wife, and I already liked her a lot, but we weren't allowed to date or anything because she wasn't from our church. So she became a member of the church in 2017, and she had to, the rule is you stay for 6 months, and then after that you're allowed to date or whatever. So I waited for 6 months, and then in 2018 I was allowed to ask her to be my girlfriend, which I got permission for from the pastor. And then he gave me permission, and then went to her brother and sister, who were both also members of the church by then, and told them that he would do everything he could to break us up because I was a bad guy. And he told them basically everything, like, oh, Joel has a depression and he did this and he did that. Everything I ever confessed to him, he told that to them, and also to her then. And I really had to fight for the relationship, but I had the luck that my wife, now she's my wife, tried to find out whether everything that was being said was true by going to me and asking me. So then I was able to show her, like, I have no idea why pastor would say stuff like that. And that kind of opened my eyes. But what really opened my eyes was that in that same year, that same girl that I asked, have you ever killed an animal? She came back and said to me that you remember that question that you asked me 3 years ago about if I've ever killed an animal. I said yes. And then she told me the whole story, and that really shattered my whole view of who Pastor was, because apparently the pastor had asked her to participate in a drama video where she was supposed to kill a fish on camera, that was supposedly based on Proverbs 7 about a young man that follows a woman like an ox going to the slaughterhouse. He had a whole story made up about that, and she had to participate in that drama, and she did that because if Pastor asked you to do something, then you do that. No questions about it, even though she didn't like doing it. Then he lost that video, and she had to do it again. And then his computer crashed, and she had to do it again. And in total, she had to do it like 4 times. He asked her if she would ever want to do a chicken, and she said no, because a fish was difficult enough. And then she asked, why do you want me to kill fish all the time? And he confessed that he found it exciting, that he had a blood fetishism. And this was because of his name, which was... It sounds familiar to the Dutch word for boar, like a wild pig. And he thought that he was a filthy pig who needed to be slaughtered as well. That was his whole fetishism thing. He was messed up in the head. And the only reason why this girl came to me 3 years later is because she said she felt like the Holy Spirit wanted her to tell me this. And she found out that she wasn't the only one. In total, there were 12 girls that she knew of then. That number has now climbed to over 20. And I have spoken to more than one of these victims. And during these meetings, and also other meetings that he had with her, he also sexually abused her. And when she told me this, I was really confused. And of course, she didn't tell me everything at once because it was traumatic for her to recall those experiences. And the more she spoke to me and the more she shared, I found out that there was something seriously wrong. So we went to the church council, and the church council then removed the pastor from his position as pastor of our church. So you think that they're trying to solve the problem. That's what I thought. And that's why I stayed in the potter's house. I stayed in the door. But what happened after that is that the victim's house was vandalized with graffiti, with the words slut and whore, because she was being made out to be the seductress. It was a consensual relationship, according to them. A new pastor came about 2 weeks later, and that pastor was actually recommended as the next pastor by the old pastor, and it was his best friend. And he swept everything under the rug.
So here's where your research and your experience is beginning to merge and converge with my research and my experience and the experience others have shared, not just with the abuse side of things. There is this transference that happens, and it is part of the movement. It predated Branhamism by a long ways, but they focused so heavily upon, through British Israelism, they focused on this idea that the last chapter of the book of Malachi, where it talks about, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet, they tried to say that this was not John the Baptist, that this instead is a new figure, and that this book, even though the prophecy of Malachi was written to Israel, not to the Gentiles or not to the modern world, they try to say that we're going to rip out that last chapter and we're going to apply it to modern times. And whenever one group kind of get stagnant, another group spins off and they claim this transference. You and I have talked about this some beforehand offline, but this is a problem because this is how new groups spin off. It's going to tie a little bit into what I said earlier about Chuck Smith, which we'll get into, but that transference is it's just awful. That is what you said earlier happened to your group, right?
The fellowship was built on the principle of Elijah and Eliza, of the transference of spirits. You know that Eliza got a double portion of the spirit of Elijah because, okay, well, if the fellowship, if that whole principle is real and you have a thing that is the transference of spirits, what kind of spirit was being transferred when that pastor was our pastor?
That's exactly it. If there's one point that listeners take away from this, it's exactly that. It really doesn't matter if the person is good, if the person is suited, if the person is fitting. Like you said, it could be a friend, etc. As long as they can convince the people that this transference of spirit is happening, the people will accept whoever it is, whether good or bad. And it's so horrendous when you think that there are people who use this and they'll get into ministry not even being fit for a minister.
It was a big issue, and I was trying to correct that by basically saving the church from a monster. I did everything that I could for that, and then when I noticed that nothing was changed and that they were actually gaslighting me into believing that this woman was having a consensual relationship with the pastor, then I started asking questions. And I started digging deeper. And at one time I got so mad at the pastor that I told my family, who had left by then, my father and my mom, if the door is a cult, prove it to me by showing me in a scripture where it says that we have false doctrine. Because I thought we preach from the Bible. If we preach from the Bible, then everything we do is correct. And then they came with 33 pages of information, and I had some studying to do, and I found out that they were telling the truth, and that I was wrong, that the door was wrong. And I started digging deeper into this, and at one point, I didn't want to live with the idea that my family was right and I was wrong. That means my whole life was built on a lie. So I went to the pastor because I wanted my pastor to tell me what I should tell my parents. And my pastor just said, well, do you still believe in tithing and headship? As if those were the most important things, even though I had more important things to discuss. And the way he responded to me was like, I thought, should I still believe in those things? And at the same time, a lot of things happened because at the same time, I wanted to ask my girlfriend to marry me. And I got permission from the pastor. So I went and proposed to her. And then I came back and I wanted to pick a date when we were allowed to get married because the pastor picks the date. That wasn't us. The pastor told us when. All we could do is say, we want to marry in the summer. That's it. And then the pastor said one day, he didn't respond to my messages, but then we went to church and he said, I want to talk to you and to your fiance and then together. So first to me, he told me he wasn't going to marry us. First to my wife, he said some things that I don't remember, or I wasn't there, so I don't know what they said. All I know is what my wife then said to me. But when we had the meeting together, he told her while I was there, you shouldn't marry Joel. When you marry him, you're gonna end up in a hole. He's gonna pull you out of the church. You're gonna have a miserable marriage, all these things. And then after the meeting, my wife was crying and he was laughing kind of ish at her. And I was trying to make that meeting stop as soon as possible, by not saying anything. But after a while, I got so agitated. I did say some things like, well, this is going the wrong direction. I want to get married. I don't want to not get married. And then after the meeting, we stood up and we walked away, and she told me, do you hear the way he spoke to you? As if you were a piece of shit. And then I said, yeah, I'm used to it by now. And I meant it. I meant it, really. And then she said, what are we going to do now? And I said, we're going to leave. This is they don't have the right to do this. I tried to save this church from a monster, and this is how they repay me. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. And when you really think about it, what they're doing, like I said, they're splitting the family units apart. They're involving themselves in ways that kind of destroy the family unit before it even gets created here. And they don't realize that where a church could come in and be a big part of your life, especially during wedding ceremony and helping future planning, instead what they're doing, they're alienating the very people that they could be helping if they were spreading the gospel. I think that's the key. They're not really concerned about the gospel. They're concerned about the group. And so the new family doesn't matter. And it's, you know, from there it turns into even more destructive to the family unit. So it's just so terrible. What happened next? What was it like whenever you started your plans to get married?
So we left. We planned to get married 4 months later. I invited only 4 friends from that church, because I knew I was going to lose everyone by leaving. And, 2 of those friends told me that I was outside of the will of God and that they would not come to our wedding. And those same 2 friends and their wives have then since left. And we are friends again. I mean, I understand. I was like that too.
Yeah, I was really hurt whenever I left the group. And then so many people in the group cut me off. And it took me quite a few years to realize that I was just like that. I was the same as them. And it's just so, so wrong. And it's a different world once you come out of it. Now you're on uncharted ground. There's this feeling of helplessness because now you have to build a new support group, a new group of people to be with. And what was that like for you with your new wife?
Yeah, so after leaving, I had to find out, I had to discover actually how you actually make friends, because I considered people who went to our church to be my friends, and then we go to the same church, so we're friends. And now all of a sudden, how do you make friends in the world? It took me about 2 years, and it was very lonely because it was also COVID. So I didn't really have friends at that time. I had my family, and I had a lot of support from them. I also tried to figure out like what I had actually just been through. And one of the last things that I told my cousin after I left the church was, you don't have to worry about me. I will not become one of those rebels. And now I'm one of the biggest rebels they have ever seen, basically. I became part of part of 2 Facebook groups that they had, where I came into contact with other people who had been members of the Potter's House. And after a while of seeing the posts, I noticed that every post was the same, but they were all by a different author. Everybody was saying the same things. And everybody was also saying, somebody has to do something. Somebody has to do something. And nobody was actually doing something. So I was thinking about what I could do, and one of the things that I really wanted to do was write a book. So that's why I wrote my book, Escaping the Potter's House, where I was trying to make a final argument, basically. And that argument was that it wasn't just me. It wasn't just my story, because every time I did have a conversation with someone, it's like, yeah, that's just you. That doesn't make the whole thing a cult. But I was trying to show them what a cult is and all they kept doing and they still keep doing is saying that experiences don't make it a cult, but they don't even know what a cult is. They cannot define the word. They have never ever researched what defines a cult. So they don't know. And I was trying to make a final argument by taking the experiences of 10 former members, compiling it into one book, and those 10 former members are from four different countries as well. So I'm showing that it's all over the world. Every place where you have a fellowship church, it's the same stories, but by different authors. And after writing that book, I came into contact with some other people who have also been in cults. And one of them actually became international news in 2019 because he grew up on a farm in the Netherlands. And he wasn't registered anywhere. He was born there. He had lived for 25 years and nobody knew he existed. He also wrote a book, and then another person that I met, he was now a cult expert at the police department. He had also written a book about his experiences where a cult tried to frame him for being insane, and he actually spent years in psychiatric institutions trying to prove that he wasn't crazy. And the three of us started a company together where we are giving trainings and workshops and lectures to healthcare professionals to provide better healthcare for cult survivors.
Wow, you've been busy.
Yeah, I've been trying to do a lot of things. I've also started my own nonprofit for people who left the Potter's House. I'm trying to do a lot of things to show that they have become a cult and to try to get our story heard. I started my own YouTube channel called The Potter's House Cult, where I post videos. But it doesn't matter what I do. Everything that I do keeps being attacked. And it's always by people who have never known me, who have never met me, and who seem to know the most about me, because they are telling me things about me that are just simply untrue, but that's the story that they have made of me in their head.
So I promised at the beginning I would have you talk through your research into Chuck Smith, and I don't want to lose sight of that, so let's talk about that now. Again, you and I have been researching the same things, but from different angles, actually from different destructive groups, which is interesting. Tell us a little bit about your research into Chuck Smith.
So what I later discovered, actually fairly recently, is that, if I'm not mistaken, then Chuck Smith was the founder of the group that Mike Winger actually left, right?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Yeah. So, and Chuck Smith was the founder of the Prescott Potter's House, which is the headquarters of all the fellowship churches worldwide, of which there are now about 4,500 in 149 countries, I believe. So Chuck Smith founded the Prescott Potter's House, and what I have heard is that Wayman Mitchell has always felt some kind of rivalry to Chuck Smith. So I was always trying to be better than Chuck Smith, but he never actually mentioned his name, at least not to me. The part where I grew up in the Netherlands, we didn't hear the name Chuck Smith ever. This is all things that I have later found out, and also the part that the fellowship has its roots in the new apostolic reformation is what it's called. That's also new for me. I didn't know that. because what the Potter's House did and what Wayman Mitchell has done always is he has stolen a lot of doctrines and stuff that he could use to build up his fellowship, his own branch, because he was trying to make something better than Foursquare, I guess, and then never mentioning anything that was any other preacher ever, because he was basically isolating us from any other form of Christianity. They were preaching against YouTube pastors, against finding sources from other Christian churches or denominations. So what I know now is very little, and that is just that Chuck Smith and Wayman Mitchell, they knew each other or they were in the same circles.
Yeah, exactly. I know people get angry when I mention names like Chuck Smith. They think John's focusing against Chuck Smith. Chuck Smith, John thinks, is a bad guy. It's not that. It's that the system was bad. The system was destructive. And especially the theology that we need this Elisha spirit to rise from the modern Elijah, the Chuck Smiths, you could almost go down the line of all of these different famous people, some good, some bad, but they rose up to be something greater than what a human should be. They created a following that revered them in a way that a human should not be revered. Well, what happens is because the theology is destructive, people will splinter off of this and then they'll go become even worse. And I have seen some groups who branched off of some movements that were kind of benign. They weren't really that bad, but the underlying system, the theology, was bad. So if you could give some advice to people who are trapped in the group and help them to escape, what advice would you give them?
Well, the thought that helped me most was that every minute I spend here knowing that one day I will probably leave is a minute wasted. If I'm probably gonna leave one day, I might as well do it today. That's what drove me to really go through with it and leave the Potter's House for good. I didn't want to waste any more time.
Well, that's very good advice. Thank you so much for joining me and for sharing your story.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information or to share your story, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.